All right, the Transportation Committee will come to order. We are in full transportation now, and members and folks in the audience, we're going to do just a little bit. We're going out of order here a little bit. We're going to take Senator Dibble's Senate File 1484, and then we'll go back to the top of the list. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and appreciate your accommodation. Senate File 1484 has to do with safety and accessibility of our bridges. As we know, bridges are built to last for a long time. They're a major investment in our trunk highway system. Mr. Chair, what this bill simply seeks to do is to make sure that as we take a look at building these bridges, and you know we've had this conversation from time to time on lots of individual bridges, it just simply asks that MnDOT take a look at safety concerns and accessibility for pedestrians, for bicyclists, of course, for motorists and other roadway users, and whether or not we're tending to our obligations under the Americans with Disabilities Act. So it asks that we also, as we're looking at bridge projects as they're being built under the prioritization of bridge projects, it doesn't set a different priority, but it simply says when bridge projects are funded under this section, that we take a look at those particular elements that I described earlier. It does give, of course, the commissioner broad discretion and authority to make a determination if this makes sense. It's simply asking MnDOT to take a look at this and consider it. Mr. Chair, I should mention there is an A1 amendment just to provide some technical changes and accommodate
Senator
a
Dibble
few comments.
Senator Dibble moves the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed.
Aye.
Motion prevails.
And it also incorporates, taking a look at this subject in the statewide transportation planning report. So it kind of hits this element in three spots, and as MnDOT is thinking about its work, planning for its work, and implementing these bridges. So,
all right.
We have a couple of folks who can testify in favor of this bill. We have Ethan Fowley from Fresh Energy and Chris Bell, who represents the Minnesota Council on Disabilities.
Aye. Chair Murphy and members of the committee, my name is Ethan Fowley. I'm at Fresh Energy. I'll be very brief and just say that we thank Senator Dibble for bringing forward this bill, and that will move us towards a cleaner and healthy transportation options for Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Mr. Bell, this is Senator Murphy. This is Chris Bell.
Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. On behalf of the American Council of the Blind of Minnesota, of their Advocacy and Legislation Committee. There are many reasons, both federally and state policy promotes pedestrian bicycling, health, environmental reasons, etc. I think this bill is another important step towards being inclusive of all Minnesotan citizens. I think it's also important because many of us here are in the baby boom generation. Right now, people 65 and over are about 12% of our state population. By 2030 or so, that's going to go up to over 20%. And, stuff happens when you get older. Vision impairments, hearing impairments, and there are some people that really ought to be walking more and driving less. My father is 86. God bless him, he's real healthy. But he's developed some vision problems, and he still wants to drive, which is okay as long as my stepmother's along so she can say, okay, Herb, the light's green. You can go now. I'm almost ready to jump in the front seat and drive myself. But that's why I think for these long-term projects it's very important to allow all Minnesotans, people who currently have disabilities, as well as people who will develop disabilities later in life, to be able to walk and bike safely. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. And thank you, Senator Dibble, for offering the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bell.
I have spoken with MnDOT, and they're comfortable with elements of this bill and elements they still want to work on a little bit specifically. And I don't know if they're going to come to the table and represent themselves, but specifically this first part where we're doing the inventory work, and now we're going to track a couple of other elements. of our inventory. They think that might create a little cost, and so we're going to continue to work with MnDOT on some of the pieces that that they've raised, and try to make them even more comfortable with this bill.
And Senator Dibble, we're going to what I would like to do is go ahead and move your bill to the full finance committee, and before you get a hearing there, you know, we want to make sure that MnDOT is comfortable on board, because, you know, I think the committee, just looking right and left, I think that we're on board with the concept here. We want to make sure that it doesn't get out of control as far as cost. So if you can work with MnDOT to help kind of suppress that a little bit, it'd be great.
I will reaffirm my commitment to do that, as I did earlier in a private conversation with Mr. Peterson of MnDOT.
Right.
With that, Mr. Chair, I don't know if you want to call for other testifiers.
I want to have one other statement on that cost issue, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. When we design accessibility in up front to structures that are in the process of design for construction, the cost of accessibility is nominal. The cost of accessibility increases if we have to retrofit, but designing it up front, it's nominal.
Thank you.
I concur. Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble moves that Senate File 1484, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hope you didn't mind my adding.
Senator Lynch. And thank you, Senator Lynch, for letting Senator Dibble get that bill taken care of so his testifiers could head out. Senator Lynch, you have the distinguished Mr. Sheehan with you today, I see, and we're working on a few interchanges down in our neck of the woods.
Mr. Chair, we are.
That's a very good thing.
Thank you.
Senator Lynch, Senate File 1300.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We are pleased to be here tonight with Senate File 1300. Mr. Chair, I have the A1 author's amendment.
Members, on the A1, on the A1 delete everything amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What you have before you tonight is a design-build pilot program. This is the result of an idea that was initiated, frankly, to me from Olmsted County. But I think larger than that, I view this as a tool and flexibility that we can are trying to afford to cities and counties in order that they can do everything that they can do to help move projects forward. As I mentioned, this is a pilot design build concept. Before we get into the contents of the bill and some further details, I do want to just exercise one word of caution, and that is that I think it's important to understand and realize that this comes forward as a tool that could be available. But this is not designed, nor it should be. This design-build concept is not for everyone. It's not for every project. And one of the concerns, frankly, that I have communicated, I think, clearly to the counties as we have worked our way towards pulling this amendment together, and to frankly to the other stakeholders, is that at the end of the day, I believe that there will be counties who will be disappointed, and they'll be disappointed because their project wasn't deemed appropriate for what this pilot program is designed to do. And I would just suggest, as I have to the counties, that that's not a sign of failure, but rather that we were trying to put parameters in place so that for those projects that this is suited for, and for those counties and cities that this is suited for, they'll have that option available to them. And so I just ask you to keep that in mind as we go forward and discuss this bill. Mr. Chair, at this time, I'd like to ask Mike Sheehan from Olmsted County to make a few introductory remarks.
Mr. Sheehan.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Lynch. I think the objective of this bill is to allow cities and counties to have another little tool in their toolbox in order to deliver some of the projects that we are asked to deliver, whether it's at a county or a city. I also think it's a tool that we could use for some of these emergency projects. I know in 2007 we had some heavy flood water damage down our way, and we are currently repaired them, but this year we'll be finally putting them in, replacing those structures, and I think this would be another avenue to use to replace some of these emergency projects. And it also, like I said, it worked for some. There's some major projects, as you referred to early, possibly some interchanges throughout the state that may work for this type of project. Mm-hmm. But this would be our thoughts. The County Engineers Association supports this, as well as the city's group also. So mm-hmm. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sheehan.
And Mr. Chair, Ryan O'Connor from AMC will talk more specifically about the contents of the bill and some of the issues that we aim to address.
Mr. O'Connor, and for the testifiers, don't forget to sign in. Thank
Absolutely. Good evening, Mr. Chair, members. This is a complex process, but we tried to simplify.
Mr. O'Connor, you've got to give your name for the record.
Oh, excuse me. I'm Ryan O'Connor from the Association of Minnesota Counties, and good evening, members. I'll start over. to try and simplify a complex process, we hopefully, you should have gotten a handout, a two-page handout I see members with, and I'm going to reference that here as I do this briefly so that we can make this move faster. On the first page of that handout, you can see that there is a complete process flow chart from inception of if this were enacted to when a contract would be awarded to a selected firm. And basically, this allows you to see the project visually without having to go through the intricacies of each part of the bill step by step. But the intent here, as the process moves along, is to find buy-in from both the contractors, as well as MnDOT, as well as the local engineers. All inputs are asked for, especially at the front end, in selecting appropriate projects for this pilot. On the second page, or on the back, excuse me, of that flow chart, there are a few notable points about this design-build pilot program, and there's more words here than I want to walk through, but there are five main bullet points that we attempted to overcome in our conversations with design-build stakeholders while creating this pilot. This pilot attempts to systematically identify local projects that are suitable for design-build, and there are some bullets as to why that is. It was meant to create a mechanism to educate firms with little or no design-build experience, because that is an issue, so that they are able to submit qualified bids on these local projects. We don't want firms to be unable to be competitive in this process, because we recognize many firms in the state have not gone through this before, and we want them to have an outlet to be able to exercise their professional ability and come up to speed so they can go forward and do this. And MnDOT has done some work in this area before, and so we want to tap into their knowledge base through this pilot program. Third, that kind of brings me into my point of taking advantage of MnDOT's knowledge and experience. Fourth, emphasize that project oversight is an extremely important aspect of the design-build process. One of the largest misnomers is that design-build is a thing where you can wipe your hands clean and then let the firm take care of everything, and there have been steps tried to be put in here to ensure that is not the case, and I can guarantee you that the engineers are well aware of the fact that they need to be as involved as if it were a design-bid-build type project. And finally, the pilot allows the legislature to come back and evaluate the success for a range of projects. The selection council is tasked with selecting different types of projects that may be suitable for design-build to see where it works and where it might not, because we don't think it might work everywhere, as the bill author already alluded to. Finally, the second page of that handout provides you with some general information about design-build, and I'm not going to walk through it, but if you have questions about design-build, there's first a diagram that compares design-bid-build processes to design-build. And finally, on the very back of that page, it lists some of the advantages and disadvantages to both types of procurement process, and it demonstrates that neither process is perfect, meaning that there are good scenarios to use either one. And I would be more than happy to take any questions on the specifics to the design build pilot, but at this time, I will stop there. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that you were willing to hear Senate File 1684, which was my bill on modifying some of the provisions for the design build process. That bill wasn't quite ready to be heard tonight. The Association of General Contractors was working with MnDOT and wasn't able to come to a full consensus on the legislation as I introduced it. But I was wondering if we could hear from them just briefly on some of their comments as it relates to Senator Lynch's bill, but also perhaps just maybe giving the committee a little bit of educational background on what the bill that I had introduced would have done.
Senator Sieben, we're definitely going to take some testimony from MnDOT on this bill. And, you know, in regards to the other bill, your bill, I can tell you that I was quite disappointed with the news that I got about an hour ago that MnDOT had backed away from what they were asked to do by our committee last year. It appears that the negotiations went well and that there was a loose deal put together, or there were promises made that seems like the guy in the corner office jerked MnDOT's chain and backed him away. And I'm not happy about it. So Mr. Rudin and the MnDOT folks that are here, we're going to take up Senator Sieben's bill here in the next couple weeks, and we're going to pass it. So,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lynch.
Tim Workey from AGC is also here and could provide some additional comment on the provisions contained in Senate File 1300, if that would be helpful to the committee.
No, that would be fine. And, folks, Senator Lynch has agreed. Well, we'll get the testimony on the record here first. So, Mr. Workey.
Mr. Chair, just a quick question.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, is there a fiscal note to Senator Lynch's bill?
Senator Bonoff, there is, but we don't have that yet, and that's the other reason why I'm going to suggest at the end of the testimony that we put this bill on the table. And everybody knows this, but that report to the legislature costs money, setting up a council costs money. And so there will be a fiscal impact. It might be small. It probably will be small, to tell the truth. But anyway, Mr. Workey.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, committee members. For the record, my name is Tim Workey. I represent the Associated General Contractors. I'm going to try to be brief and try to be clear as I can and not confuse folks, members of the committee. First of all, with respect to Senator Lynch's bill, I want to be very clear that we are grateful for her openness to work with us. We've had several conversations with Senator Lynch. We're also thankful for the opportunity to work with AMC and LMC, the League of Cities and the Counties. They have been more than accommodating of our interests and our concerns. And frankly, let me just kind of address what those are in a broad sense. From the contractor's perspective, it's important that there is one process that is utilized for design build selection and for design build procurement. And we have worked over the years, and if I can reference the MnDOT statute for trunk highways and design build, it was the Associated General Contractors back in 2002, I believe, that put forward that proposal and eventually got it passed into law. So we are very supportive of a design build method, but it has to be done correctly, and there are some elements of it that we believe are fundamental. There has to be some fairness and objectivity, transparency, are the three key things for us. And because at the end of the day, these are public dollars, and they have to be administered fairly and openly and competitively, and the process needs to be competitive. I agree with Senator Lynch, and she made some very astute comments, that design-build is not a procurement model for every project. It does not fit every project. But I would also add, it is not something that every contractor can do. In this state, there are maybe a handful, on my one hand, that I could count, of contractors that are capable to perform this kind of work. And our concern was that if there were unfettered or unregulated ability of counties to move into this model, that they would be ill-prepared to administer that model, and there would not be available ready contractors to bid that work and provide that competitive nature to make sure that the value for the taxpayer is brought to the table. So, again, we appreciate the opportunity that they've been more than accommodating to our concerns. I think Senator Lynch's bill is a very good product, as opposed to some other bills that we've seen this session that just propose a generalized design-build method may be used. There needs to be a process prescribed to bring about those issues of fairness, objectivity, transparency, et cetera. And I'll leave my comments as that, and if there are questions, I'll be glad to take them.
Well, Mr. Werke, you know, the members of this committee, there's, you know, even though we know quite a bit about transportation as a committee, the details of the design-build process are very detailed. And we rely on people like yourself and Mr. Chigalow to give us good information. And so I'm going to ask for your professional opinion here. Senator Lynch's bill, even though it's a pilot project, I mean, are you willing to stand behind 1300, this bill?
Mr. Chairman, we are We are willing to stand behind that bill and think it's a workable model. Our concern is that there were some other elements that were part of Senator Sieben's bill that we were working on that we think could improve the bill, and we're willing to work with Senator Lynch going forward to identify those things and bring them over into this bill if that's the case.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I would just echo that all along the way, we have been very cognizant of trying to, in formulating this process, there was a great deal, I think, a strong commitment to work so that anything in here would be consistent with MnDOT policies and procedures. And I, too, like Mr. Werke, am extremely committed and interested in seeing a process move forward that is done thoughtfully and correctly and fairly and all of those things. And Mr. Chair and members, I would suggest that I do think that Senate Fall 1300 is a good product. And it's a good product because we've had so many conversations with so many stakeholders. And I was, I only learned of the situation with Senator Sieben's bill early this evening. I have to say, though, in all honesty, that the suggestions from particularly from the AGC, mm-hmm. have been incorporated into the bill that's before you tonight. Mm-hmm. And I would certainly think, as the process evolves and should this bill move forward independently on its own, at which time there might be modifications made to Senator Sieben's bill or, you know, whether that's tomorrow or in the middle, it could be in the next weeks or months, those items could certainly be incorporated in. But I am I wouldn't suggest that it is necessary to hold this bill to wait for that work. Mm-hmm. And I say that with great confidence because of the work that has been done with all of the stakeholders to this point.
Thank you, Senator Lynch. And that part of it I'm less concerned about. It's the money part of it. I mean, I don't want to send this bill out of our committee and then find out that, you know, it's going to cost $500,000 to implement. I mean, we would have to book that. We let Senator Kielash go on $10,000, but, you know, sometimes that just falls out of his pocket anyway. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, you're welcome. Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, it's 7.30. I've been around Senator Betzel too much, I believe. And I guess I might want to talk about a Betzel amendment, and that is that he always says that we should do these things like January 15th, and that we should the report should be to the chairs of the legislative committees and the minority leaders.
Good catch. Senator Olsen, I wasn't so worried about the date, but we can change that. That'll make Senator Betzel very happy. But no, I didn't catch the part that doesn't have the minority members of the appropriate committee.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And Senator Lynch, if you don't mind, we're going to instruct counsel to have an amendment when we take this bill back off the table, when we figure out the finance end of it. Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, thanks for the suggestion. That'd be great.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Just on the date, I think it's Senator Rest. Too bad she's not here. I think her advice, you know, from her committee is not always January 15th. The advice is not December 31st. That's always the big problem because that's right in the middle of the holiday season and not super realistic. So it's either, you know, let's get this in before the holidays or after the holidays. So December earlier or sometime mid-January, I think that's the date mm-hmm. advice. So,
well, we'll have Ms. Spierzowski put it together like she does all the other ones. Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, and to Senator Lynch, I just want to make clear that in no way I don't believe the AGC intend to, we didn't want to hold up your bill. I think that what happened with my bill is completely separate from your bill, and Senator Murphy perhaps saw your bill as a way to try to possibly insert some of the language that we felt was important in my bill into your bill to keep things moving. But I just want you to understand that, you know, that I wasn't thinking that we would do this to try to hold up your bill in any way, more that my bill kind of blew up by no fault of any of us right here, but that we were just trying to see if there were other avenues to keep parts of it alive. So I appreciate your willingness to work with us in the future if we don't mess up your bill.
Senator Lynch, we're not going to mess up your bill. Okay?
You know, Mr. Chair, members, I don't have to tell you that I was a little nervous coming before you tonight.
Well, we do have a mean reputation, as you can tell.
So if I can help the good of the order, I'm happy to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mr. O'Connor.
Mr. Chair, just and as one last clarifying point, just so everyone can hear it too, when this process began and has gone along, it always was an effort on every part to be as close and consistent with the MnDOT design build process as possible mm-hmm. because we wanted to, as Mr. Werke alluded to, have one process when possible. The only times we moved away from that were to try and create additional safeguards or additional input. So I think that I just wanted to clarify as we're talking about two possible mm-hmm. different bills that it was always an intent to hopefully have just one process to make it clear for everybody.
Thank you. Mr. Esterson, did you want to comment? Oh, okay, good. Good. Then we're going to have MnDOT come up.
Mr. Chair, members, Jeremy Estenson, Minnesota Chamber. I just briefly want to add that I'm not nearly as technical as Mr. Werke, but we have a Chamber Transportation Policy Committee, which is comprised of people like Mr. Werke, who are technical and understand things far better than I do. And that group voted this fall to adopt the findings of the Transportation Strategic Management Task Force. And one of those findings was to better understand which type of project delivery system works best or is more appropriate for a given type of project at a given level of government. And we think this bill at least moves us down that path and gets the conversation moving a little more.
Thanks, Jeremy. Thank you. Mr. Peterson, I hate to put you on the spot. Yeah, but I will. Well, you gentlemen have been working on design build. Can you give us your brief comments on Senator Lynch's bill here?
Mr. Chairman, I think I'll let Tom Raven, our state construction engineer, comment on that. He's our departmental expert.
Okay, Mr.
One
Raven.
Of our experts on that topic.
Yeah, obviously design build's been good for MnDOT.
Well, Mr. Raven, you got to give your name for
my
that.
My name's Tom Raven. I'm with MnDOT. So. I'm from the Office of Construction. Mm-hmm. Design build's been very good for us, not without our pitfalls. So we agree with AGC that there are a lot of things to consider in this. Well, also, part of the bill does rely on MnDOT to do a lot of education. So I don't think there's a fiscal note on that yet, but that would require us to do quite a bit of, provide some resources for that training and what have you. So that would be something that MnDOT would have to do. But we think, done in the right way, that design build is great tool to have in the toolbox.
Yeah, Mr. Raven, I think this committee primarily feels the same way. At first, we were a little skeptical, an education process, by your department, we've become much more comfortable with design build and do see this as a very useful tool to move some projects ahead quite a bit faster. This is a pilot project, Mr. Raven, and I suppose that you're going to have a little bit to do about putting maybe a fiscal note together or trying to come up with some sort of calculation. But, if we could get that as quickly as possible, and also, if we could, if this note is going to be too big, it's going to be very difficult to do. I think everybody understands that. But, if you can give us your best shot at it, we'd really appreciate it. And, I know that we're asking a lot in a short period of time. I'd say if you could have it to us by tomorrow, that'd be great. But when you can, if you could let us know how much it's going to cost, we'd really appreciate it. And, Mr. Peterson, in regards to the commitments that were made last year to me, and they were not made by you, but by your predecessor, we were going to take care of all this design build, the Sieben bill. We're going to take care of all of this. And I thought that we had a good I thought we had a good group of folks together that could make the decision and get it done. My understanding is that MnDOT worked with AGC and a lot of our construction partners, and then it kind of fell apart at the very end. I think I know why, and I don't think it has anything to do with your guys' organization. But the message that you might want to carry back to the boss we're
going to
proceed with some
bill
here in the next couple of weeks. So
sorry, I'm spread out now.
Yeah,
I want to look at your pretty pictures. So.
The guy in the corner office does
the
morning. You guys are the experts. You sat down, you crafted a deal with our partners.
You get so schmeary.
Construction in the industry. And to have the governor come in at the last minute and thwart work that was done by this group together all during last summer and fall. And, you know, I guess you guys just had meetings last week or the week before. That just shouldn't happen. Not because of one person's interest.
Mr. Chair, just to add to that point, the Hastings Bridge and many other large construction projects that are scheduled to begin construction soon are subject to design build process. It's very important that the contractors and the construction industry here in Minnesota has reasonable assurance from MnDOT that when they go to try to get a contract for some of these major projects, that the process is transparent, objective, and competitive, and that's what my legislation attempted to ensure. It's really frustrating to hear that some of these things that were maybe could have happened administratively are now not going to happen, or that's the way it's been conveyed to me, that some things were stopped. So I would encourage you that while we're still working on this legislation, you work with the commissioner to try to see what components of my bill can be agreed to so that there can be some MOU developed, so perhaps not everything we may not need to address in legislation, but I would hope that you would be willing to work on that.
Senator Murphy, Senator Sieben, we are going to do that, and as a matter of fact, we've agreed on several things that we'll do them without legislation. I think the confusion came in on some of the items that we discussed, and I was part of that discussion with AGC and ACEC. There were several of us from MnDOT. There were some things that were put in this bill that we did not agree on. We did not agree on statutory language. We have agreed to address those in policy, but AGC insisted that those be in the bill, and that's why we did not want to be here at this session today at loggerheads with AGC and ACEC. This is the last place we wanted to be. That's why we worked so hard at those meetings. But there were some things that were put in that bill that we could not live with.
All right. We got a little bit of work to do. In the meantime, we have Senate File 1300, Senator Lynch's bill. I think that I'm going to ask Senator Dibble to make a motion to lay the bill. We'll get the rest of the financial information. But Senator Lynch and Mr. Sheehan, we're going to get this bill passed this year. Okay?
Mr. Chair, that's good news.
All right. Senator Dibble moves that we lay Senate File 1300 on the table.
As
Senator
amended.
Lynch?
As amended.
As amended, yes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion does prevail.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Senator Tomassoni.
Oh.
This should be good. Does he have an amendment?
No, where he wanted the House language.
Oh, okay. So.
No amendment?
You have no amendments?
I don't believe so.
This can't be a Tomassoni hearing then. Senator Tomassoni, we're working off the House file, so we're working off members House File 85. Senator Tomassoni.
Mr. Chairman and members, committee surprisingly awake for this hour.
We're all charged up. We just got done talking about design build, and there's nothing more rousing in this state than design build.
I noticed. I'm proud of you. Mr. Chairman, House File number 85 is a bill that allows global positioning system or navigation system to be mounted or located near the bottom most portion of the windshield. Minnesota is one of two states in the country that don't allow this, and this was brought to my attention by somebody who was driving along and told me that they had their unit down here. I mean, they had the they were holding the GPS system down here and looking at it and realized that that might be unsafe and wanted to find out if he could mount it on a dashboard and found out that it's illegal to mount it on a dashboard in Minnesota. And so I don't believe there's any opposition to this. I think that the department's okay with it. And
well, Senator Tomasoni, GPS systems got caught up in the video wars. We had a lot of people that wanted to put, mount video equipment on their dashboard so they could watch a movie or whatever as they were driving down the road. That's not real smart. But anyway, is there anybody that is in opposition to House File 85? Seeing none, Senator Fischbach moves House File 85 be recommended pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Tomasoni. And next time, bring an amendment. Okay. let's see. Maybe we should put the primary seatbelt on the GPS bill. Wouldn't that really get them? Oh, wait.
Already on the floor.
Okay. Senator Sieben.
Actually, no. We could still do it. We could read that.
Senator Sieben, Senate File 973.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Senate File 973 removes the expiration date relating to corporate deputy registrars. And I think everybody here on the committee is familiar with this issue, but just to reiterate, private deputy registrars offer an alternative for communities who might otherwise not have access to the services they provide. According to statute, the Commissioner of Public Safety must first offer the appointments to deputy registrars, must first offer the appointments to county government and second to city government. And if both units of government decline the appointment, the commissioner may appoint a private deputy registrar. So, with that short introduction, I'll first turn it over to Gary Spooner, who is a private deputy registrar in Cottage Grove.
Thank you.
Welcome,
good
Mr.
evening,
Spooner.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It is evening. as said, my name is Gary Spooner. I'm a private deputy registrar in Cottage Grove. I am one of 173 offices in the state, and one of 74 offices considered to be private corporate offices. And I provide an employment for a dedicated staff of 7 in my office. Keep them all busy.
Thanks.
The state of Minnesota, as Senator Sieben did tell you, determines the need for and location for deputy offices by rule. The Department of Public Safety's first approach is a county to establish a license bureau. The county has the right of refusal. If they do not want it, then it's offered to a city. The city does not want it, and it's still needed in the community. They then arrange for a private individual to open an office. The private individual does not have any financial assistance from the state to open these offices, nor maintain them after they've been established. So it's all on their own. The majority of the private deputy offices are family-run businesses. Somebody up in East Overshoe probably has a hardware store and also runs the deputy registrar business. While I'm located in the 7-county metro area, most private offices are located in rural Minnesota. We operate our license bureaus at our own risk, at no cost to either the state or to local governments, and have opted not to open these bureaus and assume this risk. Due to the volume of collections and the sensitive data that we deal with, we must secure cash bonds and assume all liability in accordance with state rules. Over the past few years, our responsibilities have expanded to include additional auditing tasks that require new training and certification, thus increasing our potential liability. My office, like all private offices, is incorporated to protect my investment like any responsible business owner would. However, language adopted in 1997 would ban my corporation as well as other private deputies beginning in 2012, which would leave me without the protection afforded me from being incorporated. This also impacts my ability to sell my interest in the license bureau someday. After years of hard work, personal investment, and risk, I look forward to selling my business as a primary retirement fund, since most licensed businesses struggle to break even and on an annual basis. With the economy, like any other business in this economy, we have all lost business. Unfortunately, I had to lay off two people in my office, which I do not like to do, but that has to happen because of the economy. Such sales of private offices are not unique and require the Department of Public Safety to approve the sale in advance. Now, I was appointed the deputy registrar in Cottage Grove in 1975. Because the city of Cottage Grove, who had the business, did not want it, and in Washington County did not think that they could afford to open an office in Cottage Grove at that time. So I've had it for 34 years, and over that period of time, I've also purchased the interest of two partners that have that were with me in not only in the deputy registrar business, but we also owned two newspapers. Since then, I have personally invested my resources in maintaining this operation. My only return on this lifetime investment is its eventual sale to a new owner. No, eventually, last week I turned 70 years old, and I really don't want to retire. So I'm going to be there for a while. But when I do want to retire, I want to sell it for something. It's nice to be 70. without the repeal of this existing language, my office and others like it will eventually close. The replacement of these offices by other private parties will be impossible to if the protections of incorporation are denied. These individuals who must personally invest in an office and assume the risks associated with it. This will then become a mandate for local communities to replace the office at their cost, or if they don't want to take that risk, then there will be a void in that community. And I thank Senator Sieben for authoring this bill to repeal the ban on corporate offices, that would otherwise become effective in 2012. I also thank the Transportation Committee for the opportunity to testify on behalf of the bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Spooner. And committee members, I was on the Senate floor when the Marty Amendment went on a particular bill that's the stricken language that is in Senator Sieben's bill. At that time, there was a strong feeling on behalf of some of the members, a majority of the members, obviously, that these arrangements with the public-private kind of partnership with our local deputies was resulting in these huge windfalls to a private business owner on the sale when they decided to retire. We've since had information that shows that that's just inherently untrue. It's, owning a deputy register is a valuable business, but they don't have the gross profits that Senator Marty was talking about at that time. I think it's high time that we got this off the books and let the deputies operate and let them make some money if they sell their business. It's a business like any others. Granted, they're in the business of providing a public product, but you know, it's their business. And I just don't understand why we did it in the first place. I think I was one of the, I think about 28 that voted no on that amendment, but once again, majority rules. So, Mr. Hurst.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, I'm Jim Hurst, representing the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association. I'll be very brief, and I thank you for your kind comments, Mr. Chairman. In summary, the association represents both public and private deputy offices. This is one of our initiatives. We support it across the board amongst our membership. In advance of this session, we did share this with the Association of Minnesota Counties and the League of Minnesota Cities. They did not have any opposition to this, as well as with the Department of Public Safety, and they have no opposition to this as well. I only want to add to Gary's comments that within your packets you should have a legal briefing that was obtained from recently from former Minnesota Attorney General Mike Hatch, and I think the legal memo speaks for itself as far as the need to repeal this. And with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Questions from the committee. I think we've been exposed, Mr. Hurst, to deputy registers because of your fine lobbying ability over the years. So, Ms. McCormick, is there anything on that the department wants to say? No. Anybody wants to testify either for or against the bill? Nobody's fighting to get to the bat rack. I must not be pitching. With that, Senator Sieben would move that Senate file 973 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you.
Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now we have Senator Olsen and his Senate file 1183. And Mr. Rudine, why don't you just come to the table, too? This is our kind of our annual legislative route modification slash trunk highway give back bill.
Chair members,
I'm
here tonight on Senate file 1183, which is there's three turnbacks for MnDOT, two of them to counties and one to a city. So,
actually, for the record, I'm Eric Rudine, MnDOT Government Affairs, and we would request that Section 1 be deleted. We've decided to handle the route description for that highway through a commissioner's order rather than through legislation.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that's the right amount. I better check with them because I didn't know. I think I did
it. Okay, Mr. Rudine, Ms. Berezovsky is going to check real quick here with you. Senator Olsen, while they're talking, here's kind of. You know, there's a lot of these turnbacks, and sometimes they trickle in kind of towards the end of session. So after we get done with this bill, I think this one can go straight to the Senate floor. But if you would hold it on the floor until more towards the end of session. Mr. Rudine, you're not in a hurry on this one, right?
No, Mr. Chair, I don't believe
that. Yeah, because there might be – there always seems to be a couple that trickle in late. And if we have a bill sitting on the floor, then we don't have to – you know, come through the committee again.
Mr. Chair, I can certainly do that, and I guess it'd be appropriate for me to make a author's amendment then to delete Section 1.
We've got the A1 amendment. Yeah, and the A1 amendment is done correctly because there's a couple little numbering things that council has to have the authority to change. So on the A1 amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Great. So now, Mr. Rudin, you're going to tell us about the bill minus Section 1.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Section 2 would transfer a small section of highway to Cass County that formerly served a state hospital. Section 3 would do something very similar to the city of Cambridge that formerly served a state hospital. We have resolutions from the city council and county board supporting these turnbacks. I think you have copies of those in your packets. And that's about it, Mr. Chair. We would ask for your support.
All right. With that, the only question I have is Mr. Rudin. I don't want to give you a pay degrade there. When's the Dairyette open?
Mr. Chair, Diane Lusinger from our office called her nephew today, and he reported that Dairyette is supposed to be open hopefully within a week.
All right, good. That's good information for our committee. We're going on a field trip next week.
All right,
with that, Senator Olsen would move that Senate File 1183, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. Further discussion, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Next, we have Senator Olsen, don't go anyplace, 1308. And this is another one of those all-worked-out railroad bills, right?
Mr. Chair, it is, actually. Mr. Chair, I'm before you folks tonight on Senate File 1308, which has to do with a problem that's been brought to my attention that railroad crews, when they run out of their time, they need to stop the train and change crews. So that can happen anywhere in the state of Minnesota or anywhere in the nation. But this bill is primarily addressing when this happens in the state of Minnesota, because the big railroads generally have contracted out the transportation of the railroad crews to a few different companies. And part of the issue is that they're virtually unregulated. So they're transporting these crews at all hours of the day and night in all different kinds of weather. And surprisingly, they have to four-wheel drive sometimes to get to where the train is, because when it stops, it stops. So that's kind of what is driving this bill. It's putting some requirements on the people that drive these vans. So with that, I'll turn it over to David Brown. And
Mr. Brown, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and esteemed members of the committee. I thank you for hearing my testimony today on this Senate File 1308. My name is David Brown. I am the Minnesota State Legislative Chairman for the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen. I'm also a full-time locomotive engineer actively working on the BNSF. Kind of break it down, we have come into agreement with the rail carriers and the coalition of the United Transportation Union and the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers have come to agreement on this this bill. And but to give you a little background on it, some of the railroad terminology of why we use these vans to get from train to train, town to town, terminal to terminal. And we are under the hours of service. It's called the federal standard of the hours of service of federal standard time. We're only allowed to work 12 hours, and after that, we become dead in under the hours of service. It's sometimes called the hog log. These van companies are exclusive under exclusive contract to the railroad to haul just railroad employees, train crews, back and forth distances as far as maybe a couple blocks to a roundhouse to as far as Fargo, and from Fargo to Minot, Mandan, La Crosse, Mason City, Iowa, in all types of weather, road conditions, under on-call conditions that they don't have regular schedules, because we don't have regular schedules. I feel that this legislation is long overdue. It creates a distinguished class of service for van operators, and it creates drug and alcohol testing under the CFR 49 rules. It increases the insurance liability of these carriers it has the inclusion of underinsured and uninsured insurance requirements. To make it all short, because we all want to get moving along with this, and I implore and encourage you to support the 1308, and on behalf of the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen and the Minnesota State Legislative Board, I thank you for consideration of my comments.
Mr. Chair, I have the A2 amendment, which I forgot to mention, which is this one has some handwriting on it, so whoever's passing it out, it should say, or additional insured at the bottom there, because there is another A2 amendment, but this one was when they negotiated between the railroad and didn't Dan bring it to you?
Okay, can we get the A2 amendment? All right, Senator Olsen, if you want to start explaining the amendment while we're passing it out, that'd be great.
Okay, on the A2 amendment, we're addressing it at 1.6. We're striking the language that says with the same minimum limits, and then at 1.9 on the amendment, we're adding. Mm-hmm. After name insured, we're adding or additional insured. Mm-hmm. So those are changes to amendment that I think the railroad was concerned that was language that I believe mm-hmm. they suggested, so that brings them, so everybody seems to be fine with this.
All right. On the A2O amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail.
And then, Mr. Chair, I have Mr. Weiner here, who's going to give some expert testimony.
About 30 seconds worth. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Michael Weiner. I'm an attorney at the law firm of Yeager, Youngbauer, and Barzak in Minneapolis. We represent injured railroad employees. We appreciate you addressing this. It deals with some gaps in protection and coverage of railroad employees. We have worked with the railroad representatives to address concerns and language as reflected in the amendment, this legislation will go further towards protecting railroad employees, working with the railroad representatives to do it in an effective way that meets their approval as well. If you have any questions, I'm available mm-hmm. for them. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Weiner. And Mr. Weiner or Mr. Brown, I see on page 3, Mr. Brown, you would mention that this would bring those carriers under the same drug and alcohol testing that railroad employees have to abide by. Is that correct?
Well, that would be the correct new term.
For whoever's providing the transportation back and forth to the job site.
Mr. Chairman, that is being correct.
Okay. I think that's a fine addition, and I think the railroads are in agreement. They're back there nodding their heads. So it's Senator Olsen, you must have done a really bang-up job here. I mean, so is there anybody else wants to testify either for or against the bill?
Mr. Chair and
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, I just wanted to make sure that the railroads, I guess, you saw them nodding their heads, but I guess I'm blocked, so I didn't see that. But I just want to make sure that they are in agreement with everything.
Mr. Sweeney, can you come to the table, please? And
Mr. Chair, just a simple okie dokie is fine with me, too.
Well, he's a man of few words.
All right.
Mr. Sweeney.
I'll try to be as brief as possible. Yes, we've been working with them.
Mr. Sweeney, we need
your
name.
I'm Brian Sweeney, Legislative Counsel for BNSF Railway. Chairman Murphy, Senator, yes, we have been working with them on some concerns that we've had with the language and trying to piece something together. There are a couple more things that we have to hash out yet, but we have made a very good start. And BNSF Railway certainly has committed to working with them on this.
Great.
Thank you.
Great. If you wouldn't mind signing in there, Mr. Sweeney, that'd be great. With that, Senator Olsen moves that Senate File 1308, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor.
That didn't sound like an okie
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Key Lash. And Senator Key Lash, you have a railroad bill as well.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have Senate File 1705. This bill modifies the membership of the Minnesota Department of Transportation's Commuter Rail Coordinating Committee to include two members of a labor organization that are involved with freight and commuter rail lines. One of the representatives shall be appointed by the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the other by the Senate's Rail and Administration Subcommittee on Committees. Mr. Chair, there's this commuter rail board has not been meeting on any regularity, but with the new commuter lines coming in with the North Star and all the other discussion with the upcoming rails and high speed, et cetera, we believe this is going to be meeting, and that having some labor representatives on there that are involved in the industry and have expertise about it, it could help the committee solve their issues. With me is Jennifer Schaubeck from the AFL-CIO.
Ms. Schaubeck.
Schaubeck.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you. The rail labor asked
Schaubeck,
me.
Name.
Sorry,
for the tape.
Jennifer
thank you.
Schaubeck, Minnesota AFL-CIO legislative director. Thank you for reminding me. Rail Labor came forward and asked me to come here today to testify in support of Senate File 1705. Figured they'd seen their faces enough today that maybe somebody different. Rail Labor can make a positive contribution to the assessment and analysis of rail corridors in the metro area and statewide. As part of its charge, the Commuter Rail Corridor Coordinating Committee, or CRCCC, has safety listed. It's line 1.11. Railroad workers' first charge within their duties to operate trains is safety. Decisions that the CRCCC may make in the future will affect their safety while operating their trains. Under the Railway Labor Act, rail workers have a right and unions have a responsibility to protect the safety of our membership and advance overall safety. Rail Labor has contributed to the North Star Commuter Rail Corridor by filing information in support of MnDOT docket waiver requirements for depot platform compliance while federal standards are created. Rail Labor is currently working with the Burlington Northern Santa Fe regarding North Star commuter service, crew training, and expectations of service to public. Rail Labor has a unique and historical perspective when working with the rail carriers in Minnesota and nationwide. On an increasing basis, many parties are reaching out to Rail Labor to learn the true nature of traffic routes, rail corridor capacities, and safety needs. They can assist and provide a different perspective and level of information for other parties on the committee. The Minnesota AFL-CIO knows that once commuter or passenger operations have begun, it will be in the best interest of all parties to have established open lines of communication to deal with various safety and service issues that may arise. Rail Labor's contribution should not be seen as an interference, but rather a valuable resource. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schaubeck. Senator Key Lash, we're going to make this quick. Is there anybody that opposes this bill?
Not that I know of, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. Senator Rest has asked this to be heard in her state and local government committee.
Yes.
I'm not sure of the deadlines issues, but I don't know if I can do it in also included in the omnibus bill.
Senator Key Lash, what we'll do is we'll go ahead and send your bill off to Senator Rest's committee. I do believe that you're going to be able to make the deadlines. Senator Rest normally processes bills fairly quickly once they get them. But if you don't, this is a candidate
Thank
for
you.
Inclusion. Okay.
It,
all you
Chair.
Need to do is bring an amendment in your pocket when you come to committee on the day we put the omnibus policy bill together. And
thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Just see Ms. Berezovsky. She can work magic. So, Senator Key Lash moves that Senate File 1705 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on State and Local Government. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schaubeck. Senator Dibble, guy, I almost adjourned the committee, but then I saw Ms. McCormick sitting back here, and I know that she wasn't just here for our good looks. So, Senator Dibble, you have Senate File 1349.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I have an amendment, which I've misplaced my copy of, so I'll delete all amendments. Oh, here it is.
The recycle pile here.
809-0178.
All right. On the Dibble motion to adopt the delete everything A01 amendment.
A09.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a this bill is conventionally known as "Don't Block the Box," mm-hmm. and what it does, Mr. Chair, is it allows enforcement in those instances when vehicles move into an intersection and can't clear the intersection, get all the way through the intersection, and so it's primarily focused on the problem that we experience in downtown type areas, particularly during rush hour. When a vehicle moves into an intersection and can't clear that intersection, mm-hmm. you probably have all experienced that circumstance. Then, of course, the next traffic and the perpendicular motion just can't move. And what happens, of course, in the downtown area at the rush hour is, so then that block can't move, and then it just spreads, and
so I don't have
everyone's gridlocked, and no one's mm-hmm. moving anywhere because a couple of cars, one or two cars, have moved into that intersection before they could actually get all the way through. And there you have it. Mm-hmm. It's a big problem.
Ms. Ball said, like New York City. It is, too. I've been downtown Minneapolis when we've had snowstorms, and there's just nothing moving. It's a lot
Chair,
of fun.
I'm glad you brought up New York City because they've done a lot to deal with the mm-hmm. don't block the box issue. They've done a lot of public education, which I know City of Minneapolis has engaged in, particularly in the aftermath of the bridge collapse, when so much traffic was moving through the Central Business District. But this gives the enforcement tool. They've done a lot of education. They'll continue doing that, and this gives the enforcement mechanism. Mr. Chair, we have Sandy Colvin-Roy, City Council member of Minneapolis, who can share some
Councilwoman,
thoughts.
Welcome to our committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I am, for the record, Sandy Colvin-Roy. I represent a ward in South Minneapolis, and I chair the Transportation Committee for our City Council. I don't need to explain why it's important to keep traffic moving. I think I would just point out at this late hour that we do think about automobiles in downtown Minneapolis, too. We're working hard to move our transit options into downtown, but automobiles are still the way that most workers get to downtown Minneapolis. We spend a lot of time and money, along with our downtown business partners every year, to make sure that traffic can flow in and out. We are investing every year in improving our signal system. We have traffic control agents out strategically placed every business day. We spend a lot of time with all of our partners planning for the special big events to coordinate everything, and their investments in extra technology and cameras. But we still have people who will pull into, because that extra 5 seconds is so important for them or whatever, into the intersection. And what we're missing is any sort of an enforcement tool. And that's what we're asking for with this law, a small mechanism. We will use it strategically. We will use it in downtown Minneapolis and with the message that the reason to not pull into the intersection is so that traffic can keep flowing, so our emergency vehicles can get through. But by the way, if you don't think that's a good enough reason to not pull into the intersection, we now would be able to actually write a ticket. This would allow, again, I'll say the emergency vehicles, the movement that we need to be able to assure, but it lets all the people who are following the rules get ahead instead of being stuck behind those that just have to pull ahead, have to pull in. This is also supported, this effort supported by the League of Minnesota Cities, Metro Cities, and the City of St. Paul. And I thank you for hearing my testimony this late mm-hmm. in the evening.
Thank you, Councilwoman. The City of Minneapolis and St. Paul agree on something. We've got a deal. Senator Skoy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Senator Dibble, I'm here.
here at the Capitol, and it's 5:30, and I'm heading to my apartment in downtown St. Paul, and I have to cross 94, which is always real busy. If I was to sit there and wait until there was a space open on the other side of the box, somebody would make a right turn and take it, and I'd be there forever.
The person who makes the right turn is not sitting in the intersection?
No, they're sitting there at the right lane doing a right turn and doing a right turn, and I'm way over here at the crosswalk, you know. If you don't get going, you're going to be there forever.
Well, Mr. Chair, things do get a little, sometimes at rush hour things are a little slower. I mean, I've had that experience too, but at some point you can get through the intersection. The alternative, Senator Scoy, is you do pull in, and then everyone who's trying to move straight through, get straight through the intersection, isn't going to get anywhere, and then that block to your right gets stacked up, and then that'll affect the block beyond, and then the block perpendicular to that.
And so, then nobody's even making those right-hand turns.
Mr. Chair, I know, but when you're sitting there and the line is going across to go to get on the entrance ramp to 94, and it's pretty backed up there, you know, and I get that, and the box opens up, but there's also traffic trying to go the way I want to go. And so if you were to stop at the crosswalk, the little stop line, and wait for a car length spot on the other side of the box to open up, well, there's all this traffic that's doing the right turn there.
Oh, okay.
They're so much closer to that spot. As soon as it opens up, they're in there, and you could sit there forever.
We could fix that by repealing the right on red law.
Oh. Well, also, Mr. Chair, I'll have
Lieutenant
Nelson help us respond. But if I'm not mistaken, if those cars are taking that right on the red, and you've got the green, you've got the right of way, they shouldn't be going and getting in front of you.
Well,
they should be waiting for you.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Jungbauer.
I believe Senator Scoy makes a good point. The only way you can take that right away that you apparently have is if you're the guy in the biggest truck, because we all know that 36-inch tires trump 18-inch or 16-inch tires. So, and that's why we had to add onto the deck so the people with the big trucks could come in for the comedy shows, you know, up in Duluth.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
See Larry the Cable Guy.
Mr. Chair.
Get her done.
Senator Dimble, I'm okay with your bill because I only have to deal with it a few months a year.
If everybody could remember to sign in to the log, we'd really appreciate it. So, Senator Dimble, we want to take some more. Maybe the lieutenant can answer this question that we've got here.
I mean, the witnesses can testify or not. I thought maybe Lieutenant Nelson could help us respond to Senator Scoy's dilemma.
Well, unfortunately, the rules of the road...
I'm sorry, Lieutenant. You have to give your name for the record.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Chairman. Lieutenant E.T. Nelson, Minneapolis Police
Thank
Department.
You.
I'm the Special Events Coordinator for downtown Minneapolis. Unfortunately, the rules of the road, courtesy has gone out the window. When it comes to driving in heavy traffic, people have resorted to using semaphores as a mere suggestion. When it comes time to slow down and stop for a yellow, for some reason that has been translated into speed up and try to make it through. Unfortunately, when the traffic is heavy, those vehicles back up. Now, as they back up, people get stuck in the middle of the intersection, which creates hazards for emergency response vehicles, fire, ambulance, police, and it also backs up the traffic further down the street, many blocks down the line, and in fact creates the here told gridlock. And as far as the issue of making that turn on right, by pulling into the intersection and blocking traffic, we only exacerbate the problem. If the person that is in that right turn lane, once that light turns green for you, you have the right of way. They do not. And if they turn in front of you to try to make that right turn on red, they are violating the law. They have failed to yield the right of way. Once again, it's a courtesy, simple driving courtesy. Follow the rules of the road, and we wouldn't be sitting here discussing this today. But everybody seems to have forgotten those rules.
Mr. Chair. Senator Olsen.
What kind of a traffic ticket will this get? I see at the bottom there it says no suspension or revocation, but is it just a standard fine or?
Mr. Chair, we have Mary Ellen Hang from the City Attorney's Office who can help us answer that. And this, of course, does have to go to judiciary as well.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, I'm Mary Ellen Hang with the Minneapolis City Attorney's Office. This would be a petty misdemeanor offense. Currently, as 169.115 is used as a petty misdemeanor citation, the total fine, including the fine and the surcharge that goes to the state and the law library fee that goes to the county, it's $128. So I assume that this fine will be set at that probably the same amount or fairly close to that amount.
But, Mr. Chair, if I could ask Ms. Hang, what is the base fine?
Oh, you're asking me to do math. The surcharge is $75, and the law library fee is $3, so
it's $50.
$50, thank you. That's why I went to law school. I can't do math. So $50 base fine. And just for clarification, the reason for this language that's at the very bottom about the suspension revocation is due to the federal masking regulations where with commercial drivers, we can't do any sort of law or diversion program that would potentially keep a moving violation off a commercial driver's record. So this offense, like any other moving violation, would have to get certified to the driving record. The intent behind this is not so much to jam up drivers with more moving violations on their records, but we can't get around the certification. This language means once it's on there, this won't come into play in those other laws that said that you have I think it's 4 and 12 or 3 and 12, that your driver's license can then be suspended. This conviction, while it will appear on your record and may be used for insurance rates and things like that, it won't be one of those three that will lead to a suspension. And since the purpose of this is really to try to deter drivers, hopefully through the enforcement, and we won't have to issue too many tickets, that's why we added that language, so there wouldn't be additional ramifications to drivers to get these tickets.
Were you done, Senator Olson?
Well,
or?
Mr. Chair, it just strikes me as, what do you call this violation? I mean, I have an intersection gridlock fine on my record, and people are going to go, what the heck is that? Does it have a name?
Don't block the box.
It may very well appear, Senator, on driving records as another impeding traffic. I was approached a while ago by Minneapolis officials saying this was a problem, what can we cite them with? And when I scoured, I immediately thought of this law, but when I read it, the problem with the laws that exist for these particular fact patterns is it requires the driver to be driving at a slow speed. These drivers are no longer, they're not moving at all. They pull in the intersection and they stop, and I just didn't feel that this, if it were to get challenged, I wasn't confident that we would actually be able to prove that this was a violation because of that slow speed language. And rather than take that out, because I think there are fact patterns that this driving at a slow speed does impede traffic, we just created this new language to address this specific fact pattern. I think in the end it still is just impeding traffic.
Yes. Excuse me. And Mr. Chair, you know, I just wonder if some of this is timing of lights, because sometimes when I'm in downtown, it's like, could the timing be any worse? And I would be concerned that maybe you could create timing to create situations so that you could ticket more cars. We've just already passed a bill which is going to give you the photo enforcement. And so I'm, you know, I see the problem, but sometimes I wonder what the city is doing to possibly prevent it, because sometimes the timing, I just think this couldn't be any worse. And you do have streets moving. It is during rush hours, I know, but I get more irritated with the city and the engineering than I do with the other drivers at times.
Well thought out plan. It may not seem like it, but it's built. The timing is built to encourage traffic movement. It changes daily from time to time for different zones. As you stated about the traffic cameras, it's a wonderful deterrent. This as well is a deterrent. I liken it to behavioral modification. People need to be taught that, okay, we shouldn't block the intersection. That's wrong. It creates problems, and there's a penalty for that. That penalty in and of itself is a deterrent. And it's unfortunate that it comes to steps like this, because people should just simply follow the rules of the road, and we wouldn't be here this evening.
Mr. Chair,
it doesn't work that way.
We have Steve Mosing here from Public Works. And timing is a constant struggle, and I know the city has tried and has actually gotten some very significant federal grants to try to do exactly what Lieutenant Nelson described, create timing so that it aids flow. It's a huge challenge. Mr. Mosing can help.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Steve Mosing. I'm a traffic operations engineer with the City of Minneapolis Department of Public Works. Just to go a little bit further on what Senator Dibble said, in the next couple of years, the City of Minneapolis has received approval for utilizing approximately $1 million worth of funds to retime all of downtown Minneapolis. Minneapolis has specifically three timing plans in the city: AM rush, off-peak, and PM rush. We have some event timing that we do also. These timing plans haven't been updated for some time now, but it takes resources and funds to do that, and that's what this grant money is going to do for us in the next couple years. With regard to intersection gridlock and its association with signal timing, one thing to remember is that signal timing can only do you so much when it comes to freeway access points and parking ramps letting out, which are a major cause of gridlock. So I guess in summary, we are in the future, in the next couple years, going to evaluate our signal timing and adjust signal timing to better facilitate traffic movement in downtown Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And also we expect this legislation to promote traffic flow during AM and PM peaks, but also those overlaps between PM peaks and event traffic flow.
And Mr. Chair, I'll also add that the Urban Partnership Agreement will help alleviate a lot of the gridlock that's attributable to really, really inefficient movement of buses downtown. So that'll help too. So come visit us in a couple of years, Senator Saltzman. See if your blood pressure goes down. So, I think we're working something out here.
Okay. Well, Ms. Bierzowski is just making the comment that you know, it's unclear which intersections we're talking about here, and I think that the bill wants to refer to signalized intersections.
Good point. May I ask Ms. Bierzowski to help us improve that?
You could say signalized intersection, or you could say intersection controlled by a traffic signal.
Ms. Bierzowski.
Mr. Chair, I would suggest on 1.11, after the word intersection, insert that is controlled by a signal light, traffic signal.
Semaphore.
Senator Fischbach makes that motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Mr. Chair.
Good job.
Senator Fischbach, you opened your eyes. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Go ahead. Mr. Chair, I just have two quick comments. Actually, and listening to some of the comments about how people drive, you should be asking for license plate numbers. But no, but I actually, this is something that drives me nuts when people run out into that intersection and block everything. So I appreciate this. And number two, I was as cute as don't block the boxes. I am so glad, Senator Dibble, that you didn't name this the Don't Block the Box
Act.
We need
an amendment, okay. Mr. Chair. We need to title this bill.
Thank you.
Darn.
Thank you.
Forgot to do that.
Okay, for just one more bit of jocularity, is there anybody left in Minneapolis that hasn't testified this evening? Oh, Pierre. Okay. Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, handing out these tickets, isn't that going to cause even more disruption and blockage for the time period that it takes to hand the ticket out?
No. Mr. Chair.
Well,
he's a photocop.
Yeah. Senator Kielash, here's been my experience, and I agree with the lieutenant. Sometimes you got to write a couple tickets to change behaviors, but it spreads like wildfire. once somebody starts getting a couple tickets written downtown in Minneapolis, everybody is going to know, because the next day that person goes to work and they're going to go, you know, that lieutenant wrote me a ticket last night for driving out in the intersection. I guess we can't do that anymore. And pretty soon everybody in that office building knows. So all you need to do is write a few tickets and the problem goes away. My question for the city, and maybe this is more of a legal question, but you wouldn't be able to do this with a city ordinance. Could you do it with a city ordinance?
Mr. Chair, I believe that we could, because this is, I don't think that this subdivision in any way conflicts with the existing 169-115. I think, because I know that Minneapolis is not the only city that has this problem, by making it a state law rather than a city ordinance, it now is applicable in cities like St. Paul and other places, and I think that's why they're in support of this. But I think we would not have the issue we did have with our stop on red ordinances, where there was an existing state law and our ordinance was in direct conflict with that. This, I think, is basically just making an addition to it. So I believe that we could do it as an ordinance, but our preference is to do it at this level.
Yeah, I understand that. It's a big problem in downtown Red Wing, too. Senator Saltzman.
Well, on that point, Mr. Chair, I guess that, you know, if you're able to take care of it, I don't know that other cities, you know, not they wouldn't want this, but then we sort of have a burden of enforcing this in other cities, which it may be an ongoing problem and it may be a temporary problem, but if it's a local issue, I mean, it's just kind of ironic that one of the bills we're passing for you is because people are speeding through intersections, and this bill is because they're clogged up. So it is a timing issue, is that something isn't working over there in Minneapolis, and just want to suggest that maybe that's still part of the like the real solution.
Well, I think we better pass this bill so that all the folks in Minneapolis can get back over there and work. So,
let's go to judiciary first.
Just a pet. Did they ask for it?
All right, Senator Dibble, you're going to have a couple stops here with this bill. You have to go to judiciary. They requested it. And then we got to go to finance because there's a $30,000 cost to change the law books. So Senator Dibble moves that Senate File 1349 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary. Senator Bonhoff, yes, $30,000 to make this.
It's Department of Public Safety.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Department of Public Safety's computer programming that needs to change. And Ms. McCormick, you want to come to the table?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, Pat McCormick with DVS. I haven't had time to talk to Senator Dibble about this issue. The reason we have the $30,000 is because we have all of our programming staff working on coming into compliance with MCSIA and with NIMVIDIS, and they're very time sensitive. If the effective date was changed to January 2010, we would be able to allocate our current staff to do the programming. The reason there's a cost is if we have to do it by the August 1st date, I think it is, we would have to augment our current staff with consultants. And so if the date was changed to January 1st, 2010, we wouldn't have a fiscal note.
Senator Dibble moves to include the effective date of January 1st, 2010.
This section is effective January 1, 2010, and applies to acts voted on and after that date.
Okay, we'll have Ms. Berzoski read it for the record. Thank you, Ms. McCormick.
After 1.16, insert effective date. This section is effective January 1, 2010, and applies to acts committed on and after that date.
On that motion, on the Dibble motion to amend, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Members, I think we've done quite a bit of work tonight, and we're going to pass this bill, and then we're going to adjourn.
And
so,
Mr. Chair, just to be clear, the words "or pedestrians" is not a part of the delete all amendment. It's on there, but it's crossed out. I just want to be sure. That's just simply duplicative language of another section where cars are not allowed to block crosswalks. So.
Oh, that wasn't crossed off on ours.
Oh, okay.
On our copy here, so.
Okay. Oh, I thought it was in the. Sorry about that. So I should make that motion then. The words "or pedestrians" on lines 12 and 13 should be stricken.
Senator Dibble, could you read that again?
We don't.
Which lines?
This is on the A090178 amendment on lines 1.12 and 1.13.
There's no words like that there.
The last word "or" and then the first word on 13,
oh.
Pedestrians.
Oh, okay. I understand what you're saying. And Ms. Spierzowski has it. So on that Dibble motion to amend, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. On the Dibble motion that Senate File 1349 be recommended to as amended be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Judiciary, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Dibble. Thank you, Lieutenant and Councilwoman, and to the City of Minneapolis. And we're adjourned. Thank you.